I think that companies are looking for purpose more and more often, more and more than before. And you see that in the entrepreneurial world as well. If you go to, you know, fintech organizes several startup weeks all over the country. If you go to any of those startup weeks and you get in touch with the entrepreneurial world local to you, guys, you will see that the concern for having a higher purpose on their businesses is increasing and increasing.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 135 with the CEO confidant, Angel Rebo.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston, and along with me today is the founder of Amplify, Andy Harrison Painter. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that's proud of. Thank you for joining us today. I hope you're having a great week. This past Tuesday was election day, and you know, for me, it's a pretty important day. More than anything, I think it shows where minds of people across the country are and what's important to them. And you know, this week's results were kind of a mixed bag. I think what was expected by most actually happened. The Democrats took power of the House, and you know, while they didn't take the Senate, there's definitely going to be a change of how things are done for the next couple of years in Washington. However, that said, we don't have to wait for the government to give us what we want or make things right, so to speak. You know, as entrepreneurs and founders, we know it's up to us to actually make those changes. And really, that's what New Inceptions and Amplify India is all about. It's also what today's guest, Angel, is doing in Latin America. His foundation called Wisdom for Kids is all about teaching kids about entrepreneurship through the use of their local resources. And this is exactly what we need to see more of in the States. And as you heard with Session 134's guest, Antonio Smith, education reform is something a lot of people are working on. So in this conversation, we'll be talking about the foundation in particular, how he got into entrepreneurship himself, and what companies need to consider as they're scaling to other countries. Before we get to that, I want to tell you about the personal mission guide that just came out. And yes, after about 6 months of research from different sources and the self-improvement and business world, I've got a new resource for you, and it's called the Personal Mission Guide. When I interviewed David Anderson last year, he spoke about developing his own personal mission and living by it to this day. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if there was something out there that would help people find their own personal mission as well? And I started looking around, and what I came across was a mixture of thought leaders talking about passion, purpose, and process. And you know, many times they use the terms interchangeably. Because of this, I got to thinking, maybe I should iron these concepts out a bit. So in this guide, we use the 3 P's in a particular order to help find our personal mission. And while it's not perfect, I think it does a good job of helping people find meaning in their life and what they could build a future business on. You can get it today for free by visiting newinceptions.com/personal mission guide. Again, that's newinceptions.com/personal mission guide. So before I get to the interview, I want to remind you guys that I will be archiving old episodes of the show behind a Patreon paywall for future reference. When that happens, you can check it out at patreon.com/newinceptions. Also, don't forget to subscribe and comment on the show on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on. Really helps other people find the show so they can start finding their own true north. And as usual, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/135, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm JC Preston, your host, and joining me today is Harrison Painter. How you doing, man?
Life is good, brother. Life is good. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic.
I haven't crawled out of the basement yet today.
Yeah, you're still figuring out your superpower, as you were talking about on the show, on your podcast last week.
Well, this is that time of year where everybody thinks I take November and December off, but it's actually the time I'm planning for next year. So it's actually the most stressful time of the year. Setting the projections, the everything for 2019 is being set up right now. So in the basement, a lot of whiteboarding, a lot of brainstorming and mind mapping and all that good kind of stuff. But hopefully I will get this done before December, so that way I can take at least a couple weeks off for the holidays.
Right. Well, that's one way to do it. Some people take a lot of period of time actually doing what you're doing, and some people will. I know that John Maxwell, he sets aside an entire weekend to reflect, not plan, but reflect on everything that went on in the past year. So, yeah, you got to take time to do that stuff for sure.
Yeah, I want to touch on that because the reflection is very important. I can tell you, I never did that until really the last couple of years. Because I typically ended the year frustrated because no matter how well I did, it was never good enough. I'm just one of those guys. So the last couple of years, I decided just to stop, experience gratitude, right? Just be grateful for everything, for the success, the challenges, the failures, everything for the year, and truly take, just like John Maxwell says, a full weekend just to really understand how far I've come. And when you take that time, the gravity of it really starts to sink in. And I think that most people don't take the time because we're always working harder to do better.
Right. And sometimes that doesn't quite work out just right. So cool. I'm really looking forward to everything that's going on in 2019. And just based on the different topics that you got for the Amplify Indie events for the next year, I mean, those are going to be cool. So yeah, we'll definitely make a lot of good stuff happen this year. Moving on to today's guest, he's someone that I was actually introduced to through our friend Angel Jones as he was traveling the U.S. talking to all kinds of people this
with
past
the
summer.
Cold blue water.
Yes.
I love how he said that.
He had to ask that. He was just like the time machine question and all those different things. He's like, you'll always remember Indianapolis as the home of the Bach. But, just as we are, able to put a lot of people together, especially through you and Suzanne Schaefer, we also, we are in competition with a certain city about how many people we could actually get on in a given period of time. And that city was Dallas, Texas. And one of those people that were putting people together and connecting people to Angel was today's guest. And besides being an international TV host, public speaker, and philanthropist, he's also known as the CEO Confidant. He helps establish entrepreneurs and corporate CEOs bridge the gap to larger expansion and exposure. And in fact, he's helped 1,500 CEOs in 33 different countries do just this. And in 2017, he also launched his international foundation, Wisdom for Kids, which has already helped hundreds of underprivileged kids in Latin America become entrepreneurs. Today, we're talking with Angel Rebo, who can be found on the web at divinehumanventures.com. Thanks for spending some time with us today, Angel. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you very much for the introduction. And thank you for pouring a little bit more of salt to my wound.
Yes, a little birdie told me that you Dallas got first runner up.
you're absolutely right, Harrison. That's true. I overestimated my power. Just a matter of using the right amount of time, I guess.
Well, and I'm thinking that maybe what it was more so was maybe that Angel knew what it was like to go through 33 people in one day, and that he's like, yeah, we're going to split it into 2 days when I get to Dallas.
Yeah.
It was an exhaustive day. It was a really exhaustive day.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. I mean, 33 people is a lot of people.
Yeah, it was boom, 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 boom. But yeah, let's get to you a little bit. So originally, you're from Spain. You've lived in multiple countries and speak five languages. And really, I mean, regardless of what you've done in business, which we'll get to that later, that's a pretty impressive resume on its own, just to be able to have that skill set. So obviously a lot of international exposure. How have you achieved these experiences?
Thank you. So I have to say that it's thanks to my mom and dad, really, because when I was in the school, as you know, Barcelona is pretty close to France. So the only language we could learn, foreign language, was French. But at the same time, mom and dad said, no, we want you to learn English. So I was going to normal, French classes in the school. And outside school, I was going to a private academy to learn English. So I was 17 years old, and I ended my high school, and I was able to speak French and English pretty well. I had already traveled to the UK and to France, so I was able to speak fluently both languages. I guess that was something that was a seed that my parents helped me to plant throughout my, middle school and high school.
Okay, so did you travel at all to get these other influences as a family, or was this something that, you picked up the rest of the language as you got older?
Yeah, I picked it it was always related to my work. When I went to college, three of my five summers were actually, I got internships abroad. And then my first job, I studied engineering, and I was so fed up of that I said, no, I will never do this. I have to have something else. My first real job was actually a director of the same university I studied on, in the office of director, taking care of international programs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, very cool. And I guess that was the definite moment in which I had very clear in my mind that I would always be traveling throughout my life.
That's so cool. Yeah, I, as an engineer myself, I could see why that would be a cool job there at the campus, because... yeah, there's nothing better than going through engineer classes, right?
Well, in Spain, the tuition is not as high as in here, and
right.
you actually only pay 15% of the real cost of the education. And we were four, siblings in the family, so I paid like I think that 15% of that 15%. So it was really like I could really invest my time and my money on other things, and it was very clear in my mind that engineering wasn't really for me.
Well, I found that out through my internships as well. So good company there. So when you think about your early travels, are there really any significant memories that you have that might have helped you as well into where you're at today?
Oh yeah. Well, the first one was pretty, let's say, dramatic, because my first trip ever was to work on neural networks on a communist country, which was Czechoslovakia at that time. And for the first time, I was exposed to communism. And I had, they have these parallel exchange rates, and so all this was like going to a completely different universe, where the conditions that the society was, being ruled and working under were completely different to the Western world. Then, I went to France to work for an automotive company, and then I have worked with automotive for the rest of my life. And the third year, I spent 6 months in Finland. And I think that instilled in me many different things besides the love for nature and for beautiful women, if I can say that too. for high tech. I mean, Nordic countries are really, really developed, and no, Finland was the origin of Nokia, and they have very, very strong industries. So I would say definitely those first internships during my college years definitely made an impact on my life, besides my language skills, of course.
Sure.
So how did entrepreneurship impact you? Where did that come in as you're looking? So you went through a traditional college system. Now you're kind of through a traditional internship. Where was that turn? When did you know that entrepreneurship was going to play an important role in your life?
Very honestly, it was probably fast forward until 1999 that I started to work with an American software company. And my main responsibility was to help other companies. They had in place what is called an indirect sales model, which means that other companies sell for them. So I was in charge of developing the relationships of those external companies, and we wanted them to grow. So I had to use all my skills. I forgot to say to mention before that I did also an MBA after my engineering degree. So as soon as I started helping those companies to grow, to go from, you know, a few thousands of dollars to millions of dollars, literally, so I had to help them on all aspects of their business, everything. So it was then when I started to be constantly, since 1999, constantly exposed to, you know, CEOs, entrepreneurs that wanted to take their companies to the next level by reselling or partnering with large corporations. That was the starting point.
That's incredible. Who influenced you growing up? Any entrepreneurs that have really had a lot of impact in your life?
Oh, absolutely. My father. So I was the second kid of four, and every single summer I will go. I mean, I'm telling you, since middle school, I will go with my father wherever he was going. He was the general manager of a group of food companies in Spain, and I was always going. I mean, he always had to visit some plant, so he would come home for lunch, and during the summer, every single day, I would go with him to see, you know, how he was running the businesses, those different businesses. And as soon as he could, only a few years after, he actually became himself an entrepreneur. He started working on his own businesses. When I was a kid, the first business that he owned was actually a wholesale. It was for wholesaling frozen fish in Spain. And after that, there was many, many different things. I remember spending many different summers also in fish farms. My father was pioneer in the fish farm industry in Europe. My very, very, very first income came for boxing rainbow trout in boxes, so that, you know, I was a part of a chain in which, you know, they were taking those rainbow trouts from the ponds of the fish farm, and they would basically, well, you know, kill them and then put them in boxes and then sell them to the local markets.
Okay. So you were talking about how the last business that you were involved with, you were helping companies go from thousands of dollars to sales to, you said millions, was it?
Yeah, I said millions. Yes, exactly. So I started to do that in 1999 when I started to work on similar roles. Since 1999 until 2016, beginning of 2016, I was always working on similar roles. Always, okay.
Gotcha. So, how did you? You were basically doing what you were doing with that software company. What more or less what you do today as the CEO Confident, in a way, right? I mean, you kind of. I'm sure the hats have changed a little bit, but when was it that you realized you really had that? This is a superpower that is something that is marketable. And that you can go out on your own to help other people with.
Yes, because I always had a lot of autonomy. I always had, while I was working for those software companies, I always have had the trust of the people that I was working with. So they always allow me to really develop the business and develop my business model to help this older external company.
Okay.
So that's why. So I developed my own sales training. So I developed my own sales cycles. I developed my own sales certification process, everything. So I was in charge of the entire, at that time I was in charge. First I was in Europe, and then eventually I was in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And I had to travel through all those countries and helping companies go from one country to another to expand their businesses. So right. And literally, I mean, I remember starting a very small group of companies that were only barely among all of them, literally like maybe $200,000 up to $20 million.
So what are some like common concerns or issues that CEOs have when they first start working with you these days, going from one scale to the other?
So I would say that the first is, I mean, why would they go internationally? I mean, the first thing is that they think going internationally because they think that they're leaving revenue on the table, and that's correct. But the main issue that they have when they want to do that is that they don't know culturally what's going to work. They don't know locally that they, you know, at the overseas, to those overseas markets, they don't know exactly what are the main variables that run those businesses. What's the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do? What are the right partners? Who are the right companies that we should be partnering with so that we go from where we are today or from zero in that territory to as much revenue as possible? And obviously, using and finding partners is something extremely important. So again, it's like, even though they're very successful, or they might be very successful in the local market, going internationally has a science, it has an art. And that's the part in which I held them with.
There's a book that was released in this past year. I thought it was pretty interesting. It was called Meaningful Work. And it was about finding meaningful work and what you actually did, something that fulfilled your soul and helped you get better. The writer was Sean Ashkenazi, and in his past life, he was a high profile lawyer, but that life really wore him down. And you know, he actually now owns a chocolate company called Ashkenazi Chocolate, and he works direct trade with farmers of developing countries such as Ecuador, Tanzania, and the Philippines. He also does a lot of work in their communities, and for him to have established these connections, you know, he had to learn a lot about the needs of those countries' issues and how what he could do to benefit them. And I'm curious, I mean, is this something that you're seeing more companies do, that's more like social entrepreneurship? I mean, is that becoming more of a thing?
Well, I think that companies are looking for purpose more and more often, more and more than before. And you see that in the entrepreneurial world as well. If you go to, you know, I think there's, you know, FinTech organizes several startup weeks all over the country. If you go to any of those startup weeks and you get in touch with the entrepreneurial world local to you, guys, you will see that the conscious, you know, the concern for having a, you know, a higher purpose on their businesses is increasing and increasing. So I would say that today, what I see today, most of the companies that I help go internationally, it's not for a social reason in general. It's just because they want to be able to use their assets. They want to be able to use their products and services that they have already developed locally and generate revenue, you know, and generate revenue internationally. I always recommend them at the same time that they do that. I do personally, because obviously I'm very vested in helping others with my foundation, but I always tell them, if you want, I would advise you that if you're going to go to that particular zone in the world, I would advise you to look for those communities that are in need and try to understand what their issues are and try to do something for them in a way that aligns with your business. And I think that's going to be a good first step, or one of the first steps landing into that new geography for you.
Before we got into that right there, you had mentioned that there's a few things that CEOs need to consider when thinking about going international. You said partner. I think it was, what was it? It was culture
partners, and partnerships.
Partners, and then figuring out, I think, like, what is specific, how does the business work specifically in that region? I think that was the third yeah, thing. Third.
Exactly.
And it's interesting that you bring this up, and you're doing this professionally, but I've had a couple of people that you could call digital nomads. And one of the guys that came on, his name was Gregory Deal. And in our conversation, he talked about when you leave North America or whatever country and you go out there to see how similar businesses are done in a different way. I mean, it's just such a big eye-opener, and how you can actually bring back that information to this side of the business and make things work that much better. But you wouldn't have gotten that perspective had you not gone out there. Is the businesses that you work with, you see them learning what they're like, learning from being out in the world, so to speak, and then being able to implement what they've learned into their own large company as well?
Yes, and it's funny that you mentioned it, you know, the kind of business that this guy had, because we tend to think that everything that is digital, or let's say online, regardless, you know, whatever I do from here, as the internet goes everywhere, everything is going to work the same way. Mm. And this is a big blind spot. But answering your question, absolutely. Whenever you go to a new country or a new geography and the things and the business mindset is different, the business mindset is different, things are done differently. Mm-hmm. And when things are done differently, like very basic stuff, I mean, obviously operations is a great example of that. When you go to a place and you realize that things are done manually or semi-manually, but you see that they're doing it in a way that you would have never thought. So you basically develop a way. I mean, you always, we business people and CEOs do this all the time. They're always looking for patterns, mm-hmm. right? You're trying to identify mm-hmm. patterns on how people do things. And when you go abroad, you do the same thing. And that's part of what I do for them. So when they go and integrate with the, with local, you know, overseas partners or companies, because we have to include not only partners, but we also have to include customers, then they start to understand how they have to conduct their business, but also they start to understand what's the best way to help them. And let me tell you another example. I mean, your services and your products can be extremely successful here, but when you go abroad, probably you will have to adapt those. You will have to localize those products and services so that they comply. I mean, obviously, if we talk about hardware, probably there will be many different, you know, codes that you will have to, you know, abide by. But even if it's not, you know, hardware, you know, for any other kind of software and product, I definitely advise everybody to do your homework and to make sure that you understand how you have to deliver that, because the same services and products might be consumed in a completely different way in a foreign market. And learning that obviously improves the value of your assets locally as well, locally here.
I'd like to also touch on dealing with companies going international. How important is it for you to work with them also internally on the local front when it comes to diversity, right? America right now has a lot of issues happening internally. So I want to touch a little bit on how do you help companies work through some of their diversity issues? How do you get them prepped and ready to go international when it's the home office?
It's a great question. This is if you are reading my mind, Harrison, literally. So a few business leaders, like 11 business leaders, got together only a few weeks ago, and we're acknowledging exactly what you just said. There's a big diversity problem everywhere. So and it's obviously, you know, we all talk about you know, women and women leadership, but we also talk about the many different minorities and ethnicities that are working in America. So you are absolutely right. I think that from that meeting, from those business leaders, we actually decided to launch a diversity initiative. We're going to start with you know, helping organizations understand better, you know, how to deal with women disparity. And the initiative is called Walking on the Glass Floor. And we will continue with Latinos, obviously, because I have been in Latin America for a long time. And also because we don't have to forget that we have 56, some people say 58 million Latinos in North America. Mm-hmm. And their level of, you know, they are in the corporate world. And just the other day, for one of my services, I was interviewing a guy who, what he does is exactly that. He was working earlier in Microsoft, and he was leading a unit in which he would help, you know, all the diverse, you know, minority, you know, members of the company to feel heard and have a career path, you know, as anybody else in the company. So when we start talking about when we start talking about internationalization, Harrison, we start thinking, okay, so who can lead that process? Who can lead that process inside my corporation? So obviously, sometimes there's some people that belong to that. Let's say if they want to expand their business to Europe, there's maybe some European. That could be a good fit or not. It doesn't matter. But what definitely that guy brings is the cultural knowledge that's going to help them to develop that business. And that has to be considered. You know, every single country really has their own culture. And this, if that was considered as, you know, an asset in a corporation, I think that going globally will be much easier. I see that every day because of the work I do, of course.
Well, and I'd also like to talk a little bit about some of the challenge. Like, yeah, America has a huge immigrant problem right now, right, in the media. And I absolutely don't want to go political with this. But what are some of the challenges that immigrants do have coming into a company or being hired? And what can they do, like a couple of tips to help them overcome potentially some of those issues as they're looking to expand their career or become an entrepreneur?
Yes, to expand their career, definitely, I think that they have to dare to have the tough conversation. They have to dare to have the tough conversation with their managers. That's the number one thing. I mean, it's easy to say, maybe sometimes it's not easy to do, but that's definitely, I mean, I've seen this over and over and over again, even with the companies I was working with, and I was surrounded by people from many different minorities. But that's the number one thing. Have that tough conversation in which you tell your boss, or your peers, if you have to, but mainly the person that you report to, hey, you know, this is typically how I handle these kinds of situations. It's not that A, B, C, and D. It's that it's like how I was, you know, raised. It's that's my values. That's what I have inherent to my personality and to the way I conduct my life and I conduct, you know, my professional life. So there's nothing against you. And communication is a very important thing. I mean, just to say a few examples. So the Latino community, for instance, they tend to go around the bushes before they go down, you know, straight to the point, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I've lived there for 10 years, and I mean, it's my world. You know, two of my kids were born there. So, but it's true. I mean, it's true. I mean, you might ask a question, and the reason why they're going around the bushes, it's not because they haven't done the job. It's just because that's the way they try to refuse conflict and the refuse confrontation. And there's nothing wrong with that. But again, maybe their manager or the supervisor, they don't know that, and they take it in a completely different way. That's why I said it's definitely, that's the tough conversation that has to happen. My main advice for them. So communication, I think it's a communication issue. And to become entrepreneurs, you know, everybody has the same really. I mean, the same opportunities here. I know a lot of Latino entrepreneurs, and I think that as far as they want to do it, they really want to do it. They really want to tap into your genius and start taking imperfect action. It's going to happen. They will be as successful as anybody else from here. And again, I don't want to get political at all. I mean, I think that we have to understand each other's positions. But you know the level. I mean, you know how many extremely successful entrepreneurs are in the country and their origin. So I think that this is a land where there's a lot of opportunities for everybody, regardless of their origin.
Absolutely. And this is one thing that really excites me to talk about. You're even taking this down to an extremely, the youth, with Wisdom for Kids, your international foundation. Let's talk a little bit about that. What is it, your goals? What do you want to accomplish with that? And how hard or easy is it to teach these underprivileged kids in Latin America to become entrepreneurial?
Well, let me tell you that it's much more easy than what I thought when you do your homework. So we started, the idea came up on 2015 through a revelation. And we were 2 years really working. I mean, the other two co-founders, one of them had been working in the teaching world for 45 years. And written more than 70 textbooks that have been used in the entire Latin American continent. Wow. And the other, yeah, exactly. And so we were 2 years with PhD students included, developing what was the best workshop we could deliver so that we started the kids that have probably nothing onto an entrepreneurial, you know, journey. And the other co-founder is an entrepreneur as well, like a lifetime long entrepreneur. So once we had that workshop figured out, we started to piloting it, and we did that last year. And we have three very different areas in which we conduct our workshops. It's suburban, rural, and indigenous communities. Mm. Our goal, answering to your question, I mean, there's 81 million kids in Latin America that live in poverty. That's 2014 data. 81 million kids.
81 million. Wow.
And it's 45% of the entire children population in the continent. Okay.
Wow.
45%. So imagine, let's say something that we all do probably, right? We go to Cancun, or we go to Riviera Maya, or we go to Costa Rica, the chances that when you see two kids at any given place and they are local, there's 60% chances that one of them is underprivileged. And he will never have any sort of access to the term entrepreneur, just the term. I'm not talking about the idea, just the term. He will never know anything. And the chances for the other one, I'm there might be higher because he might be going to a school. He's lucky and he's a public school, or maybe to a private school, which is not common in Latin America, as you know, and you probably, JC, you know us better, as good as I do. Mm-hmm. And so our goal really is to be in front of as many kids as possible with the most impactful workshop that exists. And I think we are achieving that.
Well, I would think something like Wisdom for Kids is so important because, you know, we do a lot of work with survivors from sex and human trafficking. And when you have that kind of poverty and the kind of immigration problems that we're facing and all those issues thrown together, it only amplifies the sex and human trafficking problem that we have. So the more education we can get these kids, the more hope we can get to them, the more training to be an entrepreneur we can get them, the better overall across the board.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, we added since the very beginning, we had very clearly in our mind that they had to do it with their local resources. So that means that, we're very strong on that message in our workshop, which is, you know, they have around them, if they look thoroughly, they will find what they need to start, you know, building their own business. And very nice story is when we go to indigenous communities, typically they are in remote areas, in the mountain or in the jungle, and in those specific places, I mean, poverty is 95%. So 95% of kids there are poor. So it's almost there's nobody that who isn't. But those kids are so integrated to their environment; it's so rich. They have really all sorts of vegetables, fruits, I mean, anything around them, and they know where to find nice stones or gems or meteorites or anything really, and they are so close to nature, and that's something else that we are doing with Wisdom for Kids, which is, you know, you are all wise. I mean, wise in the Spanish meaning of being a wise kid. So they are all wise. All the kids are wise, but also, you know, we have around us in nature, we have everything that we need. And if we look enough, we're going to find that way to add value or to give something that all the people need. Wow. In the form of a business.
I love that. I love that. Have you ever seen the movie Poverty Inc., the documentary?
No, I haven't.
I highly recommend it because it kind of shows all the different ways that the current nonprofit or charity system is kind of broken, right? And they do touch on the fact of how important it is to train the locals and then let the locals take it, right? Just what you're talking about. Because historically, a lot of times, the great white hope from America comes in and does some good and then leaves, and then everything crumbles because there wasn't that scalable system put in place, right? So in order to see that, I think what you're doing is beyond incredible.
We're really blessed, and thank you very much, obviously, for your comment. And we're really blessed because one, you know, this co-founder I told you about before, who happens to be the father of the other co-founder entrepreneur, he was in charge of the education of, yeah, I think, I don't know, it's a crazy number, thousands and thousands and thousands. So almost every single, there's not a town in Mexico and in some places in Latin America that doesn't have a teacher that he taught, that he helped to become a teacher. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the power of that? Being 45 years training teachers consistently in the most important university college in Mexico, doing that. So that's why what you just said is you just nailed it. Harrison, you just nailed it exactly. If we didn't have this very strong presence on those communities, then we would go there and everybody would forget what we did. And that's one of the secrets of Wisdom for Kids.
Man, that's moving the needle. You know, definitely check out that movie. You know, it was an eye opener for me, and it really changed my life, because we look at an industry, and the nonprofit world is an industry that has all the money in the world, all the resources, and tons of volunteers, all the manpower, woman power needed, but yet it very seldom seems to move the needle. It just kind of flatlines. But I think what you're doing, the strategy you're taking, that's when we start seeing hockey sticks take place. That's when we start seeing people really moving forward and bettering their lives. And that's when we're going to see that, what'd you say, 47% poverty?
45% of kids.
That's when we see 45% become 35, become 30, become 25. That's how it's done.
Exactly. I agree. Thank you. I will definitely watch the movie really, really, really soon. Thank you.
So here we are, coming to the end of the year already, end of October. Wow. We've already talked about Wisdom for Kids and the future of that. What else has you excited for the remainder of this year and going into next year?
Well, there's many things that get me excited. I mean, first, in our family, we love we love Thanksgiving, we love Christmas. We typically receive, relatives from Europe or from my wife is from Cuba, so sometimes some relatives come from there. So it's a very family oriented, and we like that very much. From a business perspective, I'm closing the year really, really strong, and I'm really planning on making a larger impact in actually the kids, not only in Latin America but also here. And I have started to take already some applications of kids or parents that contact me, and they say, hey, would you allow my kid to come with you to Latin America, and you can show him what is the real world at the south of the border and what does that mean? So we have started to do that, and next year we're gonna deploy a program to do that, to help parents that they have those crossroads before the lives of their kids, and sometimes they don't know, the kids don't know where to go, and the parents really, really care about that. And that has me excited, because that means that my local community here also can be benefited from what we do in Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's cool. And I'm going to have to introduce you to some people too. That's, I love it. Next segment is the rapid fire questions segment. And again, we're going to ask you the questions relatively quickly, but you don't have to answer them as quickly, just so you know. So if you have a little of a more of a thought than just one sentence, it's totally okay. So what is your three top favorite books that you often gift or tell others about?
The Celestine Prophecy is one. The second one is Sebastian Siegel. What's the complete name of that book? Because I read it in Spanish. I'm trying to translate here. Of Richard Bach, and the third one is Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza.
In the last several years, what's something that you've become good at saying no to?
Woo.
Or have you?
I have become good in saying no to. Uncommitted requests for partnerships.
Explain that a little bit.
I used to say yes to a lot of different things, and I think that our economy has to be based, and our work in this world has to be based on collaboration. As soon as I left the corporate world, I started to develop several partnerships. And I was doing so much that I realized at some point that I'm going to be a little bit dramatic here. I was being the doormat of some potential good partners. So I learned that lesson. I learned the lesson to say no. I don't know if it's clearer now.
What advice do you often hear adults giving children, but you would call BS on?
Do whatever the teacher tells you to do.
Well, see, for me, that was a problem because my mom was a teacher, so...
Mine too. Mine is a teacher.
That's good.
Here's a big one. When you become overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do? How do you deal with that? How do you get out of that funk?
I start giving love to what surrounds me, mainly people and plants.
What's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
Systematically taking the imperfect action.
Wow, I like that.
I think that's the most pointed response we've ever gotten.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Systematic response with imperfect action. Okay, wow, I like that.
Systematic imperfect action.
Oh, yeah, cool. Well, again, Angel, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Again, your website is divinehumanventures.com. Where can people find you on the socials if they want to get in touch with you?
Yes, they will find me. If they Google, or if they go to Facebook, it's Angel Rebo. They will see me both personally and professionally. The same in Instagram, the same in YouTube, the same on YouTube, the same on LinkedIn. I'm very strong on, I'm very active on LinkedIn. I would say that's the place where I post my posts, and I have my interviews with very interesting people, and where I spend most of my time.
Yeah. I'll head over there and add you if I haven't done that already. All right.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much for again joining us, and it was a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, JC. Thank you, Harrison. And thank you, everybody, for, you know, listening to what I had to say today.
There you have it, guys. Angel is truly doing some amazing work. And just by engaging with him a little bit over the last month, you know, I can tell he's found his niche and really makes an impact with those he works with. If you want to connect with him, I'll be sure to have his contact information available in the show notes via newinceptions.com/135. And in the show note extras, there are a few videos of Angel's that you can check out as well. In the conversation, we talked about him being on Angel Jones's show. So I'll have that video up of that 12-minute conversation. We also spoke about his nonprofit, Wisdom for Kids. So there's a few videos of him discussing that in further detail. And finally, I have a coaching session of him discussing fears and limiting beliefs and how to get over them. So that's it for session 135. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with us today. Hope it brought you some value. Don't forget to grab your copy of the new free personal mission guide. You can find it at newinceptions.com/personal-mission-guide. Again, thanks for joining Harrison and Angel and me today. And until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, Instagram @new.inceptions, and on the web @newinceptions.com.